How did you work yourself into that kind of an environment? I mean, were you going to do a book a day, or did you have other plans for your students?
Well, the reading list was quite substantial in my first course on U.S. history. It was only Wallace and me then, because John Spielman, who was there when I was being interviewed, and who offered me a cigarette, which was gratefully received. It was nerve food, he called it. I mean, here I was in the grounds of a Quaker college. I had no idea what that meant. It did not mean not smoking in the library. We all smoked in those days. But Spielman was gone when I was there. So the entire history department was
Two
Wallace and me.
people. How
And I
many?
was on, and he was a very, I was very grateful for the fact that he cut down my teaching load. So he only taught two courses each semester instead of the normal three and three in
Three
those
and
days,
three.
yes.
And how many students, how many history majors would you have had, and how many other students in
We
that
had
survey?
about, I think we had a dozen or so senior majors, but only three juniors. And I taught my American history class in two sections. I had one for a sort of seminar for junior and senior majors, Ron Shapiro and Norm Pearlstein and Tom Kessinger, Don Radojak come to mind, and then another and somewhat larger course for the non-history majors.
Did you have this survey? Because I sometime along the line should ask you about your American History Survey, which became famous in its own day.
Did I have the survey? Yes. I mean, I taught a
From
course that
the
was quite,
beginning.
yes. I just called it American History from the Beginning to the Present or something. And that's what I've always called it. And
How many students would show up for that?
well, that my first year, there were, I guess, counting the two sections, maybe 25 or 30. And there were about 20 in my section of Western Civ.
And you did both.
I did both.
Now, when did the survey become immense?
The next year. We had three junior majors, something like 35 sophomores signed up to be history majors, which was twice as many as any other department. We had a major workload.
How many students were in the college at that point when you had
About
35?
450.
And per class, that means a little over 100.
Yes.
And you had 35 coming in as junior majors in
Right.
history.
Yes.
This is a great tribute, Roger. This is really a
Well,
wonderful tribute.
it was an unusually small group of juniors. I don't know why, because there was a dozen or so senior majors, which is about what it should have been out of the 100 or so graduating seniors.
So you had all men for students, but you had come out of that tradition. After all, Yale
Yes, I'd
had
gone to
all men.
Yale, and although I'd had at Harvard, I taught Radcliffe students in the honors. I tutored one-on-one. I tutored junior and senior honors students. So I'd had some women students, but I had no women students from Bryn Mawr for a couple of years.
I see.
One or two from Swarthmore would come.
And this was, that changed the atmosphere, or did you find the atmosphere compatible when you had mostly young men? And did it change at
No.
all when the women arrived?
Well, when we say women arrived in the classes, of course,
Yes.
in the later 60s and through the 70s. Women arriving at Haverford is not till, as you know, until
Yes.
1980 or so. But I didn't find any, as you suggested, I was used to it. I'd gone
You.
to an all-boys prep school as well,
Oh my.
after, to 10th, 11th, and 12th grades. Up till then, coeducational school. So I was used to both, and I didn't make. And I was used to both at Harvard, so I didn't have an immense learning curve, right? A steep one to have to deal with young women.
It's an interesting question. I'd like to ask you about Quakers. You mentioned it before, but it's one of the questions that Emma Lapsansky thought would be useful to know on how people regarded this campus with its Quaker honor code and its large Quaker presence?
Well, there were a good deal. Proportionately, there were far more Quakers than there are now.
Yes.
And the entire the administration was minuscule. I mean, the year before I got here, there was Hugh Borton as president, and we had a director of development, and Arch McIntosh is the famous director of admissions, and Dean Cadbury. That was it. I mean, for the entire, you know, an entire building is occupied by deans and provosts, and I mean, Dean Cadbury was it until just before I got there. They hired Jim Lyons, but these people were, of course, all Quaker.
Yes,
and there were a number of birthright as well as by convincement Quakers on the faculty. Quaker meeting was still compulsory every Thursday. You had to do it, I think, 4 times a year if you were a student. And faculty was encouraged
to
go to meeting. Yes.
Did you attend?
Oh, yes. Not often. I was extremely busy right, in my first few years at the college. But yes, I went. I found it restful when the students weren't protesting. Occasionally the students would object to a compulsory chapel by being deliberately unpleasant. If John Kerry got up, and I remember one incident in particular, to talk about on a return from a sabbatical in Vienna to talk about cathedrals, a student would stand up, and whenever I see these monuments to their oppressors built by poor serfs, I cry for them, kind of, as in, don't ask me to come to meeting more often. statement.
As for the weighty Quakers who were here, I mean, the Cadbury presence must have been enormous, was it?
The Cadbury. Well, remember both. I mean, Hugh Borton and Cadbury,
yes.
Lewis Green, Howard Teef. I had the impression that everyone at Haverford was tall. I mean, there's Wallace McCaffrey and Ira Reed and Howard Teef and Ariel Lowy and Lewis Green were among the most, not all Quakers, of course, were among the weightiest members of the faculty when I first got here.
Well, Roger, I can't see that stopping you in any way, shape, or form, but that's just a local opinion here.